Welcome to the 12th Man Rising Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Here's your hosts, Lee Vowell and Todd Vandenberg.
And welcome to the 12th Man Rising Podcast. I'm Lee, the staticky end of this is Todd. Todd, how are you? Coming from my poor. Oh my gosh, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, I'm well.
It is awful.
I am well. How are you? I'm well. How are you? Is it less staticky now?
It is actually. It like now. It was a loudspeaker
that you're yeah, speaking
from. Like a yeah, what do you call like, this thing? Not a loudspeaker, but a.
That's doing nice. It's all a Sony version.
The thing you project into, what do you hold it? And it's not a mammogram. What do you call it?
Vibrator. Oh, I'm sorry. It's microphone.
No, not a microphone. You know what I'm talking about? Like you,
it's
you
a hold talking it. Stick. Yeah, it's a talking stick.
Megaphone.
Yeah, it's a talking stick. Those are
talking
those are,
stick.
Those are traffic cones.
Traffic. They were cones. Have you seen Spaceman? By the way, the
I've not seen Spaceman yet. I have not seen Spaceman yet. I'm afraid to see Spaceman. Although I did see a trailer of it, and he did not do his typical where he blows up and loses his shit. So I was like, maybe I'll watch it.
Yeah, I mean, he's good at Punch Drunk Love. He's good at times.
He is. When he decides not to do his shtick, he's excellent. He's excellent in Punch Drunk Love. I can think of like three or four movies where I really like him. And it's not so, he seems to be like a wonderful, like maybe one of the most wonderful people in the entertainment industry. Like seriously, right?
Yeah.
But I resent is the fact that he gets critical praise for recycling the same performance over and over and over, and it's not an enjoyable performance. It's like, oh, let's do Jack and Jill, except this time with a plot. It's like, dude, you're capable of acting. Would you please act?
Didn't he go to Juilliard?
And that's the famous story, right? Where he was it Juilliard or
something like that. Maybe it wasn't Juilliard, but it was some school like that.
Yeah, a very prestigious school, right? And he said that eventually we'll talk about the Seahawks, but he shares the story.
Well, Adam, this is breaking news. Adam Sandler is now a part owner of the Seahawks. That's not true. Don't look that up. But that's
part owner of our podcast is like, oh, and suddenly I'm banned. But he shares the story. It was like this one professor told him, was like, dude, you're never going to make it in this industry. He's like, you know, you should just quit. You don't have it. And then years later, this is after he was the biggest star on Saturday Night Live. And clearly he was. And I think at that point
he and Joe Piscopo.
Yes. and he and some friends were at a bar and he sees that professor at the bar and he walks over to him and he brings his friends and he says, it's like, hey guys, I'd like you guys. Yeah, you know, guys, all to meet this. He's a professor of mine, and everyone. You think the punchline is, hey, this is the guy who said I was never going to make it, and instead he thanks the guy. He says, you know, you are the only professor who ever bought me a drink.
That's interesting. And
which tells you a lot about the guy, which is like, you know,
yeah,
doesn't speak much of his acting ability, which he has some. I wish he would use it more often, but speaks volumes about the kind of person he is. And I love that story.
You know, to be fair, though, if he had been acting this whole time, would he have this deal with Netflix that he makes all these different kind of films? I don't even know how he finds to make all these films.
Does he make different kinds of films, though? That's the issue.
Does, I mean, Spaceman's completely different from the last the movie came out in 2023, maybe. Right? With his family, where it was...
Maybe.
It was based on his daughter, which did you ever see that?
Nope.
That was really good, actually. His daughter's bar mitzvah, and it's really good. He's in it, but he's definitely not the main character. His whole family is in it, really. But
yeah, I'll get around to watch. And that's one of those things. There's a lot of stuff to watch. Like eventually we'll talk about our five Rob Gordons, and I didn't even get around to.
Do we have Rob Gordons? I think we just have Oscar talk.
Anyway,
I think we're just talking about like the Oscars themselves, which we'll do at the end of the program if you want to tune out for that instead of listening to all the Seahawks talk.
There you go. Or actually, you could probably turn it off right now and go, I don't know, make some waffles and then come back for the Oscar talks. Depends.
That's true. That's as true as this bumper sticker. So yesterday I was driving around drinking and driving. No, I wasn't. But I was driving around and I saw this car that obviously belonged to Mary, mother of Jesus, whatever. It's a weird family. But the bumper sticker on her car said, "God hit that." I was like, well, at least it's pretty killer.
I think you should sue them because that sounds like copyright infringement to me. But anyway,
mine's just the reporting.
Yeah, and yours is much better.
It's a straight reporting. You know, there's no emotion involved.
That's true.
Just like Fox News, there's just straight reporting. Straight reporting. No bias.
None of this by. I like what you did there. Straight reporting, no bias. Very clever, sir.
Bias.
That's why people won't want to vote by Biden because, you know. Yeah. Anyway,
Seahawks. So, a couple weeks ago we were talking about how they didn't have any money for free agency and that they would create. We weren't surprised they made moves. We actually, you know, everybody that follows the Seahawks knew they were going to create moves. And the moves they made weren't ones we had not talked about or assumed. The Seattle Seahawks this week released Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, Will Disley, and Brian Monet. And none of those should have been surprising. I've heard some people a little surprised. It's like,
how would you be surprised by that?
Yeah, Diggs is maybe the most productive player. For whatever reason, something has happened not with Disley, but just him in the scheme. And I think I think they'll re-sign him and bring him back. But Diggs made the most sense because of all the money saved, $11 million. And I had this discussion with this person on social media. I think it was on X for all I know, which I'm really on. But the guy was like, Diggs, I don't think they're going to. I was like, well, you know, it's $11 million and they're saving all that dead cap. And I said, literally, dead cap is overrated. And he was like, yeah, but still, who cares? Who cares? You look at what you can save versus the dead cap. That's going to go away next year, and they saved $11 million.
Exactly. If dead cap was the end-all, be-all, do you think Denver, not you, but this person, do you think Denver would have cut ties with Russell Wilson? It's like, oh, the dead cap's going to kill us.
That's a whole different ball game. I think we'll get into that in just a second.
But even in that case, that's an extreme case, and they still said, hey, we're better off just, you know, taking the hit.
I think the difference is that Denver just really hates Russell Wilson, whereas Seattle doesn't hate Quandre Diggs. It was just
I'm just talking about the dead cap. That's all, not about the release and the reason for the release. And like you said, I'd say there's a very good chance they'll bring Diggs back. Of those four players, I think
they bring Diggs or back. Not Diggs, but I think they bring Disley back. I don't think they bring Diggs back.
You might bring both back for that matter. Depends on what they can work out.
I think the issue there
Disley
is
makes the most sense because they don't have a tight end on the roster now.
And he's good. It's just he was overpaid.
Tyler
Mabry?
Yeah, exactly. So basically they don't have a tight end on the roster. Sorry, Tyler, but you know. Might as well be Tyler.
Diggs doesn't make sense to me because you still have all that. You do have the dead cap, which is over $10 million. I think they just needed to move on from him because he's getting, no offense to Quandre Diggs, seems like a great guy. But he's aging, especially for a free safety, and he wasn't nearly as good in 2023. I think what they need to do is keep Julian Love, which they're going to, obviously. They need to bring in Geno Stone from Baltimore. And then I think they need to sign Patrick Queen from Baltimore.
I think they need
to bring in the Baltimore defense.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, but it's bringing Stone. He's affordable, completely affordable, can play free safeties, great in coverage, not as good against the run, but he's fantastic in coverage. And then bring in Patrick Queen. But Stone isn't expensive. I think even Diggs would probably still make more, I'm assuming, would still make more than Stone would. And free agents.
Yeah, probably. And it just depends what he would sign for and how much he would take, you know, as a signing bonus, all the rest of it. But yeah, I mean, I mean, it does make more sense because they do have a safety and there's more options available at safety than tight end. And again, Disley's production didn't drop because of Disley. Disley's production dropped because of scheme. And of course, scheme could be very different now because coaches.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. You and I think the same on that. I'm just wondering how many people out there thinking, oh, it's Geno Smith's fault. He just wasn't throwing him the ball. It's like, God, that's not the quarterverse.
Yeah, because Geno Smith calls the plays. And also, to be fair to the outgoing staff, and I initially thought the hire of Waldron was great, and is like, as time went on, maybe not so much. But they did have that dilemma. You've got three tight ends, all capable of starting. I mean, absolutely, right? You're also running three wide receiver sets. It's like there's one football.
Right. Yeah.
And because the offensive line was such a patchwork. Well, again, that's
there should be two footballs. If he's a good enough quarterback, there's three footballs on the field.
Yeah, seriously. And they had to run three tight end sets a lot because of the deficiencies of the offensive line, a lot of due to injury. So you had three tight ends. You know, someone had to fall off. And basically all of the tight ends fell off in production. But if they didn't, then JSN doesn't get the ball. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So I get that. That has nothing to do with Disley. The only issue with Disley, like you said, about 6 hours ago at this point, was the contract. And I'm pretty sure you wrote an article. Credit given.
Somebody wrote an article. Yeah.
When they gave him that deal, it was like, that seemed like a lot of money for Will Disley.
Yeah, I feel like you wrote that article.
Maybe, I don't know, one of us, somebody did. But, you know, it just seemed like they overpaid for Disley.
They bid it against themselves, which was the weird part.
Yeah, exactly, which was kind of odd.
I feel like that's why you wrote it. I feel like you actually wrote that phrase. They bid against themselves. Because he was immediately overpaid based on his – even if he
– yeah.
He was never going to be so productive to warrant that contract, right? He's a fantastic guy, great – player, a teammate, I mean.
Yeah, not and, with that setup because they had other options. I mean, if he was right. The only guy, then okay, yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't throw to Noah Fant enough. They certainly didn't throw to Colby Parkinson enough.
Right.
I don't think they'll get Fant back. I hope they get Parkinson and I hope they resign those guys. Fant or not.
See, Fant, and that's the thing Parkinson. Is like, that's why I think maybe they won't go with Disley. They'll sign Parkinson, and honestly, I'd rather they. I don't know. Actually, they
need two of them.
And they do. I just don't know if they need both of those guys. You know, they need one of them for sure. As far as being reliable, Parkinson is getting there, but Disley already is. And you know, some people have said, I know on social media, is like, oh, but he gets injured. Dude, it's been years since he got injured.
Yeah, I know. It's first 2 years, right? But to be honest, I think the same thing. I'm like, well, he's injured. He's like, oh, he's not. He's not anymore. And, those first 2 years. And that was the shame.
And he catches everything.
Yeah, he does. But and he did that in the first 2 years. And that was part of the shame. And it is that we saw the potential, which was unexpected coming out of Washington, right? He was able to catch and run. And then it was like he got hurt in the first 2 years. And it's like, he can do it, but they've stopped throwing him the ball. But I'm like, just throw him the ball. We know what he can do. He's healthy.
Yeah. I clearly remember the article you wrote in his rookie season that he could be, and it was very much could be if he continues the best tight end. And he could have been the best tight end in Hawks history if he had not been injured and they had continued to use him that way. Absolutely. Easily. Yeah. Because it's
no Jimmy Graham, but.
Yeah, because he can block. A joke,
but even though Graham still holds the franchise record for tight end receiving yards and touchdowns still. So.
Which was a shadow of what he did with New Orleans, and we both talked about that and written about that. It made no sense that they brought in Jimmy Graham thinking, I was like, because they knew they weren't going to use him like they did in New Orleans. Like, why would you expect? He's like, you're not going to throw him the ball 160 times. That's what it took for him to get those numbers in New Orleans. They weren't going to do that. So that deal never made sense. Anyway,
we saw him play live in Tampa and saw him fumble.
We did.
Along with that 14-5 game, which was beautiful.
Team, that was one of the worst games I've ever seen, let alone been to. It was like, man, that's
awful.
The one good thing, though, is Bradley McDougal used that as his audition tape, and it worked. So
that's true.
Because he had a big hand in the Seahawks only scoring 5 points. So anyway, I would be happy if they bring back Disley or Parkinson. And, you know, if they can find the money to do it, bring both. Hell yeah. But it just seems more likely that they'll bring back one. And then Tyler Mabry will get 57 targets and catch 51 balls.
I just wonder what the the selling point, obviously, or I guess the anti-selling point for the players is that with Parkinson and Disley is like, hey, okay, I was in your system and you get paid, chicks dig the long ball, right? You get paid because of the catches. I mean, being a blocker is great for the team, but people notice you when you catch a lot of passes and catch touchdowns. That's what, I mean, just like Hockenson, right? He's a good blocker, but why do we know TJ Hockenson? Because he catches the ball a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Seahawks system, they just haven't been able to do that. So the player might be thinking, well, I was there. But thankfully, they have Ryan Grubb as the new OC. And maybe he, like you just alluded to, maybe he will actually use whatever is given him a little bit better. Because I think Geno is a good Geno Smith. But by the way, if they sign Stone, this just came up on
the Geno brothers. It'd be great.
Yeah. Well, no, they're actually going to make a documentary called The Two Genos, and I guess Jack Nicholson's starring as both roles.
Ooh, but I like that. I did not see you going there. I love that. Very nicely done.
But I mean, I think Geno Smith is a good enough distributor where it's whatever system is given him, he's going to be able to use it to his maximum benefit, because he's not just like, I just have to throw it here. I have to throw it here. He's not like that. He's not Russell Wilson, who's just like, I must throw it to this wide receiver and get sacked. Geno's not like that.
Nope.
He just looked worse because he had bad offensive line. That's the problem. They don't have enough first round picks to address. Like, okay, they bring back Disley and Parkinson or Fant. Orphant, I guess. I shouldn't say the end. They're not going to bring back all three. And then they draft Brock Bowers. Fantastic. But it's like, they don't re-sign Damian Lewis.
If they draft Brock Bowers, they shouldn't re-sign Disley or Parkinson.
Well, that's the issue, is you'd have to make that decision on them prior to the draft, right?
Right.
But with the interior of the offensive line is that you love to have Faltano from Washington.
Right.
But then Damian Lewis, I'm assuming, I don't know. They just have, it's so weird how barren they are at safety, except for Love, at linebacker, at tight end. It's like they literally have no one.
Yeah, it's really strange how, which you look back at it and it's like, how did this team go 9-8? And granted, a lot of those vacancies happened after the season, obviously, right? But which really is like, they were really, which is why they gave up what they gave up for Leonard Williams, because they really thought it was like, hey, we can make a push, which was kind of an odd time to do it, because they brought him in just a few games before they went through Murderer's Row. And obviously that stretch of games didn't work out that well for them.
Yeah. Great player. Great addition. It's just,
absolutely.
It was a useless addition, as it turns out. Even then it was like,
right,
do you really think you're going to make a Super Bowl?
Right.
I think they got thrown off by the 49ers losing three straight games earlier in the season. They were like, we might have a chance.
Yeah, I think so, too. Now, if it gives them a leg up in negotiations with Williams, then it was worth it.
Well, they have the money to spend, because now they're, what, eighth in the league in cap room, which sounds ridiculous. And they could still create more, reworking Tyler Lockett's contract.
Right. They haven't even addressed Tyler Lockett's contract yet. And I can't imagine he would be averse to reworking the contract to some extent and give them some additional cap room. But yeah, it's crazy. They had no cap room, negative cap room. And yeah, the league got a bigger bump than they expected. And I'm sure that the Seahawks knew there was going to be a bump in the cap. Nobody knew it was going to be that much. But, you know, I figure they probably thought, okay, we'll have $5 million in cap space after the new contract comes in, or maybe six. And then it turned out to be, what, 13. And now, but they went from no cap room at all, one of the worst in the league.
Yeah, negative cap room.
Yeah, negative cap room. I think they were like 30th, because there were a couple other teams that had negative cap room. And like you said, eighth, which is like, and they haven't yet to, like you said, lock it. There are still some other deals they could make, not even talking about other cuts, which, you know, there still could be some cuts that they could make. Not that would add a lot, but I mean, Nick Ballore. You'd mentioned him. Now there were some other players that they could still cut to add some cap room. And
Kenneth,
I hate to see
Walker,
them.
DK Metcalf.
Yeah, they could cut all those guys. You know, new coaching
Charlie
staff.
Charlie Horse Johnson.
New coaching staff, new team. Clean slate, cut everybody.
Travis Tritt.
F it, man, F it. staff, new team.
Well, I mean, that is part of it. I know you're joking, but there is an allegiance, you know. I mean, it'd be great to have Bobby Wagner back. He's still great. Hey, maybe he's getting older, but he was still good. But no allegiance from the coaching staff or Wagner to the coaching staff. Mike McDonald might be like, well, we can have the money to hopefully re-sign Jordan Brooks, and maybe we can bring in Patrick Queen. Patrick Queen and Jordan Brooks, I'm going with that duo instead of Bobby Wagner being involved. I mean, maybe they try to bring back Wagner and sign, because he would be the more fiscally inexpensive linebacker than Bobby Wagner, which sounds ridiculous, but he would be. And then you sign Queen. You've got Queen and Wagner. That would be pretty sweet, too.
That's the thing. They can get Wagner for a lot less than they can get Brooks.
But for less time.
Yeah, for less time, true. But then cap goes up again next year, and they have more cap space next year.
Yeah, but then Brooks would be gone. I guess the argument there, and I agree with what you're saying, but I guess the argument would be that with Brooks, you could sign him for 3 years. Wagner's not going to be there for 3 years.
No, he won't be.
And the cap goes up enough where it's like, if you feel like you're kind of overpaying, you're kind of tight with Brooks now, it's going to go up, so it won't look as bad 2 or 3 years down the road.
But at the same time, if signing, and this is the challenge facing John Schneider. It's like, we're just a couple bumpkins drinking beer and talking on a podcast. But
I was not drinking right at that moment, but now I am.
But the difference between signing Wagner and Brooks is that you've got enough money to sign Leonard Williams. I would rather have Williams and Wagner than Brooks and not Williams.
That's interesting, and
that's just one of the pieces. It's not, I mean, there are literally
no, that's it. They sign those hundreds. Two guys and they go into the season with a 37 man roster. Why not? Why waste the money on other players who're never going to play?
There are literally hundreds of permutations that Schneider has to look at, right? And obviously he's got a full staff for it, and it's like, he'll probably look at GTP 4.5 and I'll tell him to sign Jimmy Graham, because, you know, it's using six-year-old data. But and that's the tricky part of it. You've got to balance everything. It's like you said, they have so many holes on the offensive line, like basically both guard spots, really. You're not even sure about Abe Lucas. And
I got an email from a fan on that one. Oh, my Abe goodness.
Lucas? You got an email from Abe Lucas on that? Oh, that's awesome.
Abe Lucas was one of the players I mentioned as potential replacement players, or who should be replaced in 2024. And it wasn't because I don't like Abe Lucas. I do. But there is no way you can guarantee he's going to be consistently healthy for the foreseeable or if ever future.
Exactly. Because
he had a knee issue in college. He's already got a knee issue. He only played, what, six, seven games this past season? And even then, he got rotated out when he came back after missing weeks 2 through 12.
Yeah.
But I mentioned, like, okay, I like Abe Lucas. People don't read the articles, obviously, right? Because it's I like this person. Like, I say anything about Tyler Lockett, have to put something in. I like Tyler Lockett as a player and a person. However, and I said that basically the same thing about Abe Lucas, which was that.
Of course.
It's like, okay, there's no way if Seattle has to replace, if Fautanu is available in the draft.
Yeah.
First of all, he's better than Lucas. But if that's the guy and you have Cross and Fautanu going forward, you can count on them. With Lucas, he may be great. He may never be healthy. He's in his second season in the NFL. He only has two more under contract with Seattle.
Right.
Do you want to count on that so much that he's going to stay healthy? Because he hasn't shown he can be. That was the point of my article.
Right.
Nothing against Lucas as being a bad player, because he's not. He's tough. He's rugged when he's in there. But this guy was like, oh, you don't know anything about Seahawks football, blah, blah, blah. I was like, because of Abe Lucas. I'm thinking that maybe it was his dad or something. I don't know. Which would make sense. But I'm just like, I didn't even read it. I just like delete it, because I never respond to emails anyway. If you email me, I will not respond. It's just a general rule. Oh, it's nothing personal.
Please email me, and it will be personal, believe me. And if you say something, hey, that was really great, it's like, hey, thanks, I appreciate it. And if you say something stupid like that, because you're
you said that. I get as many good ones as I do. Actually, more good ones than I do bad ones.
Yeah,
but I don't respond to any of them, because the email feels a little bit more personal, right? It's like, okay, it's like I'm answering about, you know, emails about my daughter on this. It's not like Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And by the way, I want a quick shout out to it's a site that we both know on Facebook, Hawk Media, and they Hamster. Post a lot of stuff.
Hamster. Oh, wait, what?
And I just chatted out something because he had quoted one of your articles, and he quoted one of my articles, but it didn't. He said, according to Lee Vowell, according to Todd Vandenberg, but didn't say the name of the site. And I just say, hey, could you do me a favor? Could you link the site? Link the article, or at least link the site, so people can have context, because people take it out of context.
And then we went back. You're like, who the F is Lee Vowell? Why do I care what that guy says?
And so we had a conversation, a really good conversation. He was he's like, oh yeah, I can do that. And I was like, and he says, and this is why I'm laughing. He says, but you know, the thing is, people don't even read the headlines. And they say, oh boy, don't they ever, right? It's like he has the same thing. Everybody has the same thing. People don't even read it's not that they don't read the articles. They don't even bother reading the entire headline a lot. And we're just laughing mm-hmm. about it. It's like, yeah, no kidding.
Or they misread it.
Yeah.
It's like, the article is about. Oh, that reminds me. Go ahead. No. Thank you.
So anyway, shout out to Luke at Hawkmania. I really appreciate reaching out. And it's like, and yeah, it would be nice if people would bother to read and bother to think clearly. And again, it goes beyond sports. There's elections coming up. It's like, please think clearly when you go to that voting booth and you pull the lever for 12thmanrising.com or whatever. Anyway, so a huge mess on the offensive line. Is like, we may keep one guard worth keeping. Center, looks like he can do the job, but we don't really know. Apparently, at least in weekly practice, he couldn't beat out Evans. It's like, you know, it's just so. And Lucas is a huge question mark. I have yet to see any projection that he'll be back, when he'll be back this season. I'm not saying there's a question mark whether he can start, but I haven't seen any talk about it at all. So we don't even know if he's even going to be ready for game one. So to say, it's like, oh, maybe they need like a replacement. He's like, yeah, because we don't know if the guy can even play. Has nothing to do with the quality of his play or him as a person. Like, what the hell are you talking about? So there's so many holes on that offensive line. It's they have a lot of things to address, a lot of things to address. So to say is like, oh, they don't need to do this. They need to do a lot of work.
Which is one reason this free agency period may not be all that sexy, right? It's because they're having to address those needs instead of, oh, we got this wide receiver or we got this cornerback, which is another weird thing. I see a lot of pundits out there saying cornerback's a need. Like, cornerback is not a need for Seattle.
What was that, Bleacher Report or CBS? Probably both.
I've seen it both. I've seen
who suggested Seahawks should go for this cornerback. It's like, what are you drinking? What are you smoking or drinking?
Because they don't know. They're like, okay, they probably see Woolen. Hopefully Woolen will be better this year than he was last year and back to how he was as a rookie, which is very conceivable because he has a new defensive coordinator. Witherspoon's a stud, right?
But Mike Jackson was really good. Be better. Jackson was good. Brown was good. They have four guys who can start at cornerback. Are they the four best? No, but one of them is.
One of them is.
And Woolen was as a rookie.
And another one could be.
Yeah, they have two guys who could absolutely be in the Pro Bowl, and that's Woolen. Hell, either Jackson or Brown could pick it up and make it too. I mean, they could if you know, because again, it's a very different defensive scheme. These guys are going to be in much better position to make plays than they were in the previous season.
And held accountable more.
And held which accountable. Is you know, it's like we were talking about Adams, and I wrote an article about Adams, and I was like, to me, that's the least. And I've been defending the draft of Adams well into the point where most people have given up on him because of the injuries, right? And it's like last year I gave up because of his attitude and the things he did off the field and leaving the team. That was the issue with me. It wasn't his performance, because if you're hurt, you can't perform. But it's like he went from 9.5 sacks, all-time record for a safety, to none, period. Why was that? Clint Hurt decided not to blitz him. He blitzed him like a third of the plays he did in the next year.
But he's had zero since then, since that one year.
Yeah, he's had zero sacks since that one year. And a lot of it is scheme, because they chose not to do that.
Yeah.
And was that cover. Him or was that Clint Hurt?
That's true. But he has to be able to cover. I get what you're saying. I agree with that. But.
If you use him the way they used him, and they didn't. You know, they were going to do a lot of three safety skets and all the rest of it.
Which they're going to do a ton of under McDonald, because he did it more than any other coach.
Even more than the Hawks did. And And even when they did that, they weren't doing it correctly. They weren't bringing Adams up in the box like they should have on every damn play if they're going to use three safeties and have Love back there. Like you had said, you'd written, we talked about it a lot. I think everybody in the NFL talked about it. Julian Love makes the freaking Pro Bowl despite his defensive coordinator.
Yeah, despite him not being played. This guy's not as good. Well, it's because it became a popularity contest, it feels like, right, instead of talent.
I think it became a justify the salary issue.
Maybe, yeah. That could be it, too. But, I mean, you see Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs to a lesser degree. But you see those guys, like, we got to play him. It's like, well, Julian Love is the best safety you have this year. Yeah. Play him. Now, getting back to, real fast to the not reading the headline. I don't normally do this on Twitter, but in this case I did. Jake had written an article late last week or earlier this week.
Jake from Lupino. State Farm.
Yeah. It's about Seahawks who are currently in the NFL, former Seahawks who are currently in the NFL, who the team could bring back and maybe help them in the future. Mm-hmm. And the title is Four Former Seattle Seahawks We Would Like to See Return in 2024.
That seems and straightforward to me.
The response from this guy named JW Reed 11, who goes by Jeff.
So let's not call him out or anything.
No, I'm calling him out because this is stupid. His response is, we wouldn't I'm not making any of this up. Just disclaimer. He said, we wouldn't consider Sidney Rice a big splash in free agency. I could be wrong, but at the time it felt pretty big to me. What are you talking about, dude? So I actually quoted that. I showed his tweet and I said, this is perhaps the most nonsensical response ever.
What
are you talking about? First of all, the picture is of Ryan Neal in a Buccaneers uniform.
Yeah.
What about that headline are you missing? It's like that he completely missed whatever he thought. And then decided to go on Twitter, look at that, and respond. It's like, just think about what you're saying. I mean, I know it's social media, and people are like, oh, social media, I can say what I want. But still, don't look like a Trumper, okay?
Should not be an excuse to be an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. People should still have, and we can't in the United States, unfortunately, anymore, but people should still have decorum and treat each other with respect and maybe think about what they say before they say something. That's just being human and human nature. It should be anyway, but it's clearly it's not anymore.
No.
But do I say stupid stuff on social media sometimes? Yes, of course. Everybody does. Do I say it in real life?
And in real life, absolutely, I do.
Yeah. Every day I wake up and say something stupid to get it out of my system. Nobody's even in the room. Oh, no. My cats are hanging around.
I stretch it through the whole day. I relish the opportunity to say stupid things in real life. But
I at least think about what I'm saying when it's a response to someone. If my girlfriend comes up and says, I'm going to run to the store, I don't say, how come we don't have any lighter fluid? What are you talking about?
Address the issue.
It reminds me of this time my ex-wife, daughter's mom, Virginia, she won't mind me saying this. We were at McDonald's. Like, we never go to McDonald's. For some reason, we were going to McDonald's and then going to a movie. And we were trying to order. And my second oldest daughter, Alex, wanted some French fries.
You're Alex, not my Alex.
One and the same.
Yeah.
It's a little secret. So I asked Virginia, I was like, oh, do we want to get French fries? I don't really want French fries. We're going to the movie. I was like, oh. Okay, because we were eating before we went to the movie. And I was like, but let's go ahead and get some. We'll go ahead and because Alex wants some. And she looked at me straight in the face and she said, do you have any chapstick? And I was like, I have no idea what is being said here.
Because the French fries can burn your lips.
Exactly. But I didn't in my mind. I was like, did I miss it? I black out and miss part of the conversation?
There have been multiple reports by the Consumer Products Council that McDonald's French fries can destroy the epidermis of the lips. They're caustic, apparently.
I was like, you're mad, but I don't know what's happening. I can't fix this issue. I don't know what the issue is.
By the way, since you mentioned your daughter, I'll mention my daughter. Katie, I'm doing a podcast with Lee, my friend Lee. That always pisses her off so much. I love it. Anyway,
That makes it, it implies we've been something else. And on the record, we've never been anything else other than just good friends.
Yeah, it's just because I would always say, because once I said it's like Lee, you know, my friend Lee, and she was like, yeah, I know who Lee is. So
anytime well, I get you.
Every time after that, I make funny. A point. Like, I, you know, a
good friend, former friend, whatever you want to call them.
Lover.
She always makes
a joke. That's right. Eleanor Roosevelt.
She always makes a joke when I mention, whenever I've, over the last 17 years, whenever I've mentioned your name, because she used to say, she used to live with this roommate named Jen, and she would always start with my former roommate, Jen. So every time I mention Todd, she always says, your best friend, Todd. And it's like, it has a disclaimer.
Just to clarify,
not
which
the
one
other
is it?
Todds that I know, the thousands of other Todds.
Not the guy who runs, apparently, this guy, the founder of Beer Advocate, he's also Todd. So there you go.
Not the only New York Jets quarterback to ever play who was also French, Richard Todd.
Yes, but, indeed. The Rocket.
The Dutch Todd.
The Dutch Todd, exactly. So, yeah, which, by the way, my lovely wife was discussing me with a friend of hers, and saying her friend said, oh, he has kind of a German face. She goes, no, he has a Dutch face. Because apparently former slavers are more socially acceptable than former Nazis. So I have a Dutch face, not a German face. So thank you for dividending my honor, Sony. I appreciate that so much.
So anyway, horrible segue, ending the show with this. Speaking of Nazis, you haven't seen Zone of Interest.
I have not seen Zone of Interest. Did you ever see Zone of Interest, speaking of Nazis?
I have not. So there are, how many are there? 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Radio math is also so interesting.
There should have been 17 this year. Should have been 17.
Well, sometimes there's not 10, right?
Yeah, it's not always 10. They can do up to 10, but there's have to be at least 5. Sometimes there's not 5 that should be nominated, but they can do up to 10. Like a couple of years ago, I think they did 9.
Didn't they? They used to always have to be 5, right? You couldn't go over 5.
No,
and that left out so many movies.
And then they went back to that was the uproar over not including, I think it was honestly The Dark Knight was, or it was either The Dark Knight or one of the Lord of the Rings films. And they said, we got to stop this foolishness. It's like, we got to be able to honor movies that make a lot of money and are also good. Yeah. So that's what
speaking
they,
of Barbie. So the the nominees for this year, and we're not going to break this down by every category, are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest. Of those movies, I have seen 7. You have seen 6.
Six. Correct? You're
and the ones I have not seen are Zone of Interest, Past Lives, and Anatomy of a Fall.
And I managed to see Anatomy of a Fall, and I did not see Zone of Past Lives or
Zone
Interest,
of Past Lives. That sounds
or,
awesome.
Or the Killers of the Moon thing. So, yeah. Zone of Past Lives is it's a comedy with Adam Sandler coming to Netflix next year.
Do you – actually sounds interesting. That's a good
it
title.
Does. Yeah, it would Zone of Past Lives.
100,000 views. Killers of the Flower Moon. So of these, I will say every film that I have seen that's nominated for Best Picture is worthy of being nominated for Best Picture. Like none of them are bad.
As far as none of them are bad, absolutely. To me, if it was a 5 film entry, I would take Maestro off the list.
Agreed. 100% agree.
I think Cooper is absolutely magnificent. That doesn't make the film great. It's a really good movie, but I don't think it's a great movie.
Yeah, I agree. And the fact, I mean.
But the others are.
I wonder if it's because, and it is a good movie, but I 100% agree. Because I was thinking that earlier. I was looking at this list, ruling out the ones I haven't seen. That still makes me over 6. And I was thinking Maestro is the one I wouldn't have on there. American Fiction is they're all very, very good. The Holdovers has that kind of, it's not Dead Poets Society, nothing like that, but it has that kind of feel.
Yeah.
And Giamatti is phenomenal, and I think he's what the favorite probably to get the, at least last I saw, actor in a leading role, which is Cooper, and I haven't seen Rustin yet, which I want to see with Coleman Domingo, Giamatti, Cillian Murphy, and Jeffrey Wright. Wright is phenomenal, and you have seen American Fiction. Wright is always phenomenal, period, first of all. But he's great in that role. And Giamatti is just – did you say you had or had not seen The Holdovers?
I have not seen The Holdovers yet.
Because I think it's streaming on Peacock, but I don't know if you have that.
I have Peacock and just – life, man. Life, I swear. Anyway.
That's straight from The Holdovers. So you're sure you haven't seen that? Because that is a quote from
– Well, I wrote it. So, you know, there you go. Oh, anyway, American Fiction. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so Poor Things. We both saw Poor Things, right? Let's jump into Poor Things, because to me, that's the least likely to win Best Picture.
Yeah. It's a great film. I don't think I want to be a part of it. You're going to be a character in this. I'll be the Gerald Carmichael role. Just like, give me that one. I'll be fine with that one.
Poor Things, to me, it's and this is, if I was going to write about it, which I won't, but if I was going to write it, it's the psychosexual, psychotronic punk version of Wonka. I mean, it has a lot of similarities to Wonka. It's this candy-colored fantasy world of this depraved sexual fantasy, but it has a very interesting message throughout. I mean, like Yorgos's films, to me, it's my favorite of the films he's done. I absolutely can't stand Sacred Killing of a Sacred Deer. I just I get what he was doing. The flat aspect of the acting, I just hate it. And I've watched it twice, and I hated it more the second time. It's just, I know what he's doing. I don't like what he's doing. Lobster is great. Favorite's great. I think this is his best movie, and it is not for everybody. That is for damn sure.
Oh, gosh, no. Well, none of his films are, right? But this one is.
No, absolutely not.
This one is, it's definitely, it's not quite Saltburn, but it's definitely not one you would watch with let's get the family together and watch Poor Things. Yes.
Here's one of the, and we've talked about this a lot back when we did the movie show and all the rest of it. It's like, and I think we kind of share a loose definition. It's like, because comparing art to art is like kind of ridiculous to begin with, right? But it's like, did they do the best job of presenting what they're trying to say? And I don't think anyone can say Poor Things didn't do a fantastic job of conveying its message, right? It's very well done. It absolutely deserves to be nominated as Best Pictures. No way in hell would ever win. And I think there are other films that did a better job of what they were trying to do than Poor Things. But it's like, really well done film. Weird as hell. But hello.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, this guy's not going to turn out
Visually, people. It's the anti-Barbie.
Yeah.
They're both great films. So let's just do this real fast because we only got like 3 minutes.
We've
already gone over time. But as far as what movie have you seen do you think should be Best Picture? Because there's a bunch of great ones.
Yeah.
But there's none that are like, this is Pulp Fiction.
First, I want to throw out Anatomy of a Fall. I really liked it, but it's Marriage Story, but with a murder mystery, and Marriage Story was better. So, scratch that.
The Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston film.
Yeah, that one. Oppenheimer is great to me. Oppenheimer is a film that's also a movie. Barbie is a movie that's also a film. It's like, movies are entertainment, films are statement films, and they bleed into each other, which is why Barbenheimer makes even more sense than anything else. But to me, honestly, the best picture was American Fiction. There's no way in hell that's going to win. Absolutely not. Because if it's not Oppenheimer, it's Barbie. But
I can't see Barbie winning because of who didn't get nominated.
Yeah. Well, you know, Greta Gerwig's got good company. It's like, how many Steven Spielberg films were nominated for Best Picture and he didn't get a nomination? It's like, I don't know, five.
Which makes me wonder if Maestro's going to win because he's part of the production.
You know, again, because, you know, the films direct themselves. Excuse me. And so, you know, the whole hubbub about it is like, oh, they snubbed Greta Gerwig and they snubbed Margot Robbie. We should have mentioned her 18 times by now just so we get hits on this.
Yeah, like, contractual.
It makes a lot more sense to snub Margot Robbie than Greta Gerwig, and she shouldn't have been snubbed either, but it's like, it's about more than the central character, and yes, she's the central character, and yes, she drives it, but Greta Gerwig's a little more important to the film than the actor who portrayed Barbie. Like,
yeah,
that's all there is to it, so that made no sense. Oppenheimer's the odds on to win it. Oppenheimer, I'm pretty sure, will.
Is it?
You know, just from the all the awards and everything else. But I think American Fiction should win because it's a more complex story than Oppenheimer, but it is. And it addresses more human emotion and addresses more situations and does it even more artfully than Oppenheimer. And I'm not knocking Oppenheimer or Barbie or any of the films. And honestly, Godzilla Minus One really should have been nominated. And I know that sounds like a joke because I'm a good Godzilla fan. But if you take that film, take Godzilla out of it and just say, oh, there's a disaster and people are reacting to it. And there's this soldier who is dealing with immense guilt and PTSD. It's a fantastic film. Oh, and then it's a Godzilla film. So to make a monster movie and have this rich personal human drama that it is, people who watch, anybody who's seen this movie knows it is, like, to me, it's absurd that it wasn't nominated because it's such a well-done film. Anyway, to me, it should be American Fiction. It won't be, but it should be. What's your pick?
For what should be or what is going to win?
Both. What would you choose?
I think I would choose Oppenheimer for both.
And I can see that, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, that's the thing. It's like you said, once we take out Maestro, like, these are all great films. It was a hell of a year for films.
Yeah.
And the industry sure as hell needed it. But I mean, you know, Barbie, like $1.4 billion at commercial success, you know, totally did separate from artistry and all the rest of it. But still, it's nice when movies like this make money because they'll make more movies like this, hopefully. Same with Oppenheimer. It's like, a biography about a scientist, basically, and one of the greatest scientific achievements of all time. And what is it at? Almost 900 million?
Yeah.
Before it's 3 hours.
Christopher Nolan effect, because everything he does is just
a 3 hour and 20 minute film. What? How did that happen? You know, so again, awesome. We could use more serious, thoughtful films. That'd be fantastic. We could do more films. I don't know how many movies are there like Barbie, though. That's the thing is, like, there are films like Oppenheimer, not as well done, but there are films like Oppenheimer. How many movies are like Barbie that have this? It's nothing but a pop culture reference machine that also makes a huge statement.
Yeah, Jack and Jill's the only one I can think of.
Yeah, there you go, Jack and Jill.
But that's our show. Thanks for listening.
Why are you the worst?
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.